Hello, and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. Time marches on. It is marches. Oh, someone muzzle me. On this month's show, we're going to geek out about series fiction. And before you grumble, man, series fiction, that's like 1982. Listen, all these movies that are out there, they're all series fiction. So we're going to talk about probably some of the books that have inspired some of the movies and then some other stuff that we like, too, that might be a little more under the radar. But here to help me today is...
Amanda.
Bill.
Lisa.
Jesse.
And I'm Brian, and our unofficial podcast member is the squeaking, the creaking noise that all the chairs make. And what I've learned when I've been filling in for Clint is that, like, all the chairs make that squeaking noise, not just one. So, hey, you know, he's just here, one of the gang, helps us out, interjects every once in a while. Maybe I could, there you go, maybe you can hear it a little bit on mine, yeah.
I'll be honest.
All right, yeah, so, all right. So, since the last podcast, the Grammys have happened, and I want to say, I want to apologize for not including techno as one of the genres of music that African Americans created, because I made that little list, and we spent a lot of time talking about the electronic and dance music categories, and within recent history, techno music was created in Detroit by three African American teenagers, and that's rad. And also, when I went
back... So, you're to blame?
Yeah, I guess it depends on your opinion, right? And then I went back and listened again, too, and I realized that I just think that I sounded kind of mean, and I want to apologize to anyone that really spends, like, their life, you know, thinking about and dedicating their skill to the art and craft of writing good songs and recording good songs. And sometimes you don't get nominated to a Grammy, but sometimes you do get nominated for Grammys when you do that and you win. So if you're one of those people and you're not famous, congratulations. It's easy to pick on celebrities. That being said, if you are one of those people that dedicate your life to the craft and art of writing and recording good songs, you're probably really happy that Skrillex walked away with all the Grammys in the categories that he was nominated in.
Did he really? He did.
So in all the he was most of the electronic music categories he won. And what's funny is he actually kind of said the stuff that I said during the podcast was that, you know, hey, there's all this stuff before it was underground and it's cool that it's not anymore. But he also said, you know, I recorded this track when I was squatting in a warehouse. And I'm sure, like, all the people that, like, just, you know, are so anal and work so hard or careers were, like, you know, riding on a particular record are so happy that this guy with, like, a under buzz cut haircut was like, yeah, I recorded this in a garage. But anyway.
That's cool, though. I mean, because Dave Grohl kind of said that the album they put out, the Foo Fighters put out, was, like, him and his buddies and two mics and a tape machine in his garage.
That's, you know, it's so funny, too, cause, and they won out most of the rock categories, too. Yeah. So, yeah.
So you've got to practice your craft, not buy a computer. That's the difference.
There you go.
But didn't Skrillex recorded his stuff on a computer in a garage?
I was even going to bring that up when we were talking about it. It's like there are these, like, best recording. It's like some of these techno records, they were not recorded, right? Mm-hmm. They were, like, generated. Artificially synthesized, right? They were never recorded at all. There was no microphones involved. But anyway, but congratulations to us. Everything that we talked about, everything we're like, oh, this is cool, they all won. Mm-hmm. Like, even opera category.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey.
Brian called
right?
it.
So the only thing that Chris...
Did you guys pick our own Nashville Symphony Orchestra to win in classical recording?
No.
Because we did.
No,
awesome.
We did?
Yeah,
that's
Giancarlo
awesome.
Guerrero, the maestro there, won a...
What was that recording Grammy. For? Do you remember?
It was,
I can't remember what they were nominated for.
I knew. I got it on an email on my phone.
Hard question.
I can't tell you.
So we'll have that in the show notes.
Yeah,
so
we'll,
and
we'll,
that
we'll
isn't the first time that they've
won.
No, they've won quite a few.
Yeah, we're totally awesome. I was going to say the one thing that probably disappointed Crystal was she made a note to say that she was rooting for Cut Copy to win, and it wasn't Skrillex. It was probably
the Skrillex win.
It might have been. They swept most of the categories. So in one of the electronic dance categories, she really wanted Cut Copy to win Best Album, and they didn't win. So,
well, I was disappointed that Bon Iver was the best new artist.
Yeah.
That made me sad. I was really rooting for the band Perry.
I thought Lisa was probably disappointed, too, that Bon Iver had won so many categories. But you seemed to mellow out.
If you don't have anything nice to say, I was thinking about my words being committed to posterity, and then Bon Iver, when we need to work together on a, you know, album.
They'll bring this podcast up,
and I was like, I backtrack.
My guilt trip about my harshness happened a month later when I listened to the show. I was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have been that mean. Like, yours seemed to happen while we were actually recording in the booth.
It was the disembodied voice of my mother telling me to be nice. Yeah.
So, but before we get down to the down and dirty, we have to plug some events here at the library. So first I want to say there is the music songwriting workshop, or I should say it's a music business workshop. Crystal plugged this before, even though it was happening in March. It was February's podcast, and she's not here, so I can pick on her about that. I don't know if she did that on purpose, but taking care of business, do you have a plan? That means music business, your work, who owns it, your intellectual property rights, all that kind of stuff. That's March 3rd at 10:30. That's free and open to the public. And we're going to have some really awesome movies at Maine.
Like the movie Hard Times, March 10th at 2 p.m., New Orleans, 1933. In those days, words didn't say much. Channy, played by Charles Bronson, is an aging street fighter just trying to make a living with his fighting skills. Speed, played by James Coburn, is a two-bit promoter who arranges Chaney's bare-knuckle matches. Hard Times marked the directorial debut of filmmaker Walter Hill, who also wrote the screenplay. We are truly honored to present our podcast interview with Mr. Hill, as he rarely gives interviews. And Charles Bronson is the king of all things as well.
The king of the thing.
So the person who actually did the interview, Bill, and you're in the booth today. That was a good interview, right?
I'd like to think so. He was a nice guy.
Yeah, it was a good interview.
It depends on the guy who's you're interviewing, and he was great.
Yeah. I wanted to say, too, Bill's interviews are actually so good and so popular. You might have noticed on our blog, we've actually separated those out. So it's not just part of the Popmatic podcast anymore. It's called the Legends of Film podcast. So you can look for awesome. Legends of Film. You can just sort by that and see all of Bill and Clint's interviews.
And you got a shout-out in The Scene a few months ago in their winter issue, Things to Do in Nashville, right?
Yes, the very nice.
That's awesome.
Well-deserved shout-out.
We're also going to see Hard Times on the big screen too.
Seriously.
And you know, if you listen to the interview before, you can learn all sorts of cool stuff about the movie, and then you can come see the movie.
And Bill usually has trivia questions, so if you listen to the podcast, you might get the trivia question right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You never know what prizes may occur.
Yeah, like a Jaguar.
Not the car, the actual animal.
It's going to be brass knuckles. Yeah.
More likely just Paul Newman's popcorn.
That's nice.
They're cool. You know, either. You could go either way.
iPad 3. One more event to plug, and it's maybe just as cool as the Walter Hill interview, but Salon at 615, March 16th, 6:15 p.m., T.C. Boyle is going to be here. That's probably, for me, the coolest Salon at 615 author visit we've had yet. I think he's probably going to be promoting the paperback edition of When the Killing's Done, but he's written many great novels, and my particular favorite is Drop City. So a really awesome, world-class author will be here March 16th at 615. If you get there, it's called Salon at 615. It starts at 6:15. The actual book talk will start at 7, but if you get there a little bit early, you might get some food. There might be so many people that need a ticket to get in the door, so you might want to consider that. And that's all I got.
Also happening March 16th, I'm turning 30.
Rad.
Yeah.
Cool.
You go again.
You can send my presents to the library, everyone listening.
The music that you like isn't hip anymore. Okay, while we were out, Jesse pointed out that I thought that Randy Jackson from American Idol was part of the Jackson 5, and he was not. I was wrong. So, Amanda, what series fiction?
A lot of the stuff I read is series fiction, and right now I'm kind of working through the In-Depth series by J.D. Robb, a.k.a. Nora Roberts, and they're pretty good. I don't even know how many are in this series. It's like, I want to say, like 30 books, maybe more. I don't know. She's been writing it for 20 years.
I was going to say it has to be close to 30.
Right? Yeah. So, and I'm like on number 5, so I've just started it. But they're really good. It's about a policewoman, and I can't think of her name off the top of my head. That's horrible. The guy is Rourke, and it's set actually in 2058. So it's set in the future. And you're going to look up the name for me, aren't you?
I'm not doing anything. Oh. What's happening?
So anyway, so she's a cop in the future, and he's kind of the underground bad boy turned cajillionaire sex pot that she falls in love with, and you get 30 books of that. So I didn't do a very good job pitching that, but it's still good. The other series that I'm reading is, actually I'm caught up to it finally, is the Janet Ivanovich, Stephanie Plum series. For those of you who have been to the movie theater in the last month, you'll see it as The One for the Money, is the movie that was out with Katherine Heigl and a bunch of people that nobody else had ever heard of, and Debbie Reynolds. Because Katherine Heigl and Debbie Reynolds are then like a bunch of people that nobody's ever heard of. So the series is Stephanie Plum is a New Jersey bounty hunter girl, kind of bumbles around, kind of blackmails her way into getting the job. And then, you know, as expected, hijinks ensued. My favorite aspect is it's the love triangle. There's kind of the Joe Morelli, the Italian cop, who bad boy turned good. And then there's Ranger, a.k.a. Carlos Minoso, who was an Army Ranger for a while, and now he's kind of become the security consultant, billionaire, sex god.
I seem to notice a theme here.
There's a lot of theme in it that I've just kind of connected, but...
But he's just a billionaire, not a cajillionaire. Like,
yeah, no, see, it's okay. Still... It's,
you had to downgrade his rating.
Yeah, it started in the 90s. Like, the first book came out in the 90s on that one, but it's set in the 90s, so he hasn't quite gotten to cajillionaire level yet. So that,
it's a different tax bracket.
That's right, that's right. And I think Explosive 18 is the last one that just came out, and I believe there's a 19 in the works, and she'll probably keep writing them until she reaches, you know, fabulous cajillion. 40 and...
She wasn't going to skip a number just for fun?
She hasn't yet. Like, even, you know, Unlucky 13 that some people kind of skip, she...
She's not going to be literary and be like, well, this is volume 23, and I'm going to do the other ones later.
Yeah, and she hasn't done, like, 19.4 either. So she's just integers.
Yeah.
We're good.
It'd be hard to come up with a snazzy name for 19.4.
We could probably come up with one for her, but...
My favorite thing about Janet Ivanovich, having never read any of her books, is that her book on how to write is co-written with someone else.
And I don't like her... Like, she has other series that are co-written as well, and I'm not a big fan of those, but I do enjoy the Stephanie Plum.
So, in One for the Money, the first book, is that love triangle stuff all there in that first book?
It just starts in the first book. And I have to say that I did not see the movie. I was going to see the movie, but people kind of told me that it struggled a little bit, which is putting it nicely. And I did not like either of the casting for Morelli or Ranger.
That's bad news.
Yeah, I mean, because you'd think hot guys are hot guys, right? Yeah. But they were 0 for 2.
That's jellyfish on the beach, no way.
Yeah, and I mean, those are two actors. And the actors that she picked, I can't even tell you what their names are. So those are the guys that... No one's ever heard of.
And it's funny, too, because, like, of all the book series that are out there, like, there was, like, that movie was just such anticipation, and people always wondered, like, I'm sure that, I mean, I don't know when that first book was optioned, but, you know, obviously it's been over a decade.
Yeah.
Super popular, one of the most popular authors in the world that hadn't made a movie yet, so.
Well, and let's talk about, you know, building a franchise. You got 18 more books or 19 more books that are...
Yeah.
Out there, and you wrecked the first one. And
well, you could always...
go from there.
And I guess I overheard, right, that Katherine Heigl's accent is bad.
Katherine. That was obvious from the previews.
Where's she supposed to be from?
She's Connecticut. Heigl's from Connecticut, but the character...
So they're all East Coast, but she's a little bit too...
But she's supposed to be Jersey.
Yeah, Jersey girl.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
forget about it.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for her. Yeah. That's too bad.
Well, you can always switch actors later, right?
Well, I was trying to think who the guy that redid the Batman franchise that came in on those last... We'll get him and bring him in. Yeah.
Christopher Nolan.
We'll get Christian Bale and Nolan and we'll reboot it.
They've rebooted Spider-Man, too, there so anything's possible.
So Nora Roberts, writing as J.D. Robb, the In-Depth series, the lead character is Eve Dallas.
Eve Dallas, thank you. Because they just call her Dallas throughout the book.
Lieutenant Eve Dallas.
Yeah, she's Lieutenant and she's Dallas and she's very rarely Eve. But Rourke is the guy. And he just is Rourke. He doesn't have a first name.
And how different are you? Have you read Nora Roberts' like other novels? Like
she has the one, the Circle Trilogy. I read that one. And it's a little bit more in the paranormal family. But she's really got a pretty good grasp of plot for as prolific a writer as she is and as fast as she cranks these things out. There really is a pretty good story there, which is what was my concern when I went in. I was like, she's just going to be, you know, cookie cutter and filling in the blanks. But there's really a pretty good story, at least so far.
I guess if you're someone who's into, like, crime fiction or like paranormal series fiction. Mm-hmm. And if you were like, well, I don't want to maybe read J.D. Robb because it's too romancy, do you think that would, or?
It's pretty romancy.
Yeah. Okay.
It's more romancy than the Ivanovich. I mean, Ivanovich, there's the love triangle, but the Robb is kind of the center, like the case kind of revolves around the relationship and how it affects, you know, because Rorif was the bad guy and she's the cop, and how that dynamic works when things go crazy.
I dig it. You got to have that.
Well, and I wanted to read the Robb series for a while, and I like it because there's, you know, 6,000 bajillion books, and I don't have to figure out what I'm going to read next in my car in the morning. Like, I could just get the next one and just put it in and just, you know, drive for an hour in traffic, and then I get here, and I do the same thing when I go home at night. So I've only made it through book 5 so far, though, because traffic hasn't been bad enough.
So, Bill, I think you have something completely different.
Oh, yeah, totally different. I, of course, like crime fiction, and I discovered these in the 80s, and they're Ed McBain's 87th Precinct novels. Ed McBain's first 87th Precinct novel came out in 1956. It was called Cop Hater, and his last novel came out in 2005, and it was called Fiddlers. Also, 2005 was the year that Ed McBain died. There was a grand total of 54 books about the 87th Precinct. Each book starts with the following statement. The city in these pages is imaginary. The people and places are all fictitious. Only the police routine is based on established investigatory techniques. Ed McBain was influenced by Dragnet, but this is, unlike Dragnet, it's not dry. It has a lot of humor, colorful characters. The detectives in the book, Steve Carella, Cotton Halls, Bert Kling, Meyer, and there's even a recurring criminal mastermind called the Death Man. And,
it's a great name.
Cut to the chase.
Yeah, always entertaining. Enjoy the books, you know, getting the characters and what's happening into them. Probably the only series, and I'm still not finished with them. I need to go back to them. I don't know, I got off onto another type of literature. But anyway, oh, and here's a fun fact. Ed McBain is a pseudonym for Evan Hunter, who is more famous for writing Blackboard Jungle. And he was writing these books, and his agent at the time said, look, you're writing these detectives and you're getting known for serious fiction, said, you might want to write these under a pseudonym. And so he picked Ed McBain because it had punch to it. He thought Ed McBain
was right. I was going to say, Ed McBain is a great pseudonym if you're going to write your
And they also collaborated together on a book. It was called Candyland. The first part is Evan Hunter, and he's writing as it's a psychological study of a man with sexual addiction. And then it turns into an Ed McBain novel in which the police detectives come in and solve the mystery.
Isn't that interesting?
So they converged, they collaborated on a book at once.
And, a bit about schizophrenia.
It's called Me and My Shadow.
And in 93, I got to meet Ed McBain. He came to Nashville for a book signing at Davis Kidd. It's a moment of silence. Okay. And he, nice guy, told all kinds of great stories. The book he was signing or reading was called Kiss, and had a long career. Very interesting man. He wrote, under Evan Hunter, he wrote the screenplay to The Birds for Alfred Hitchcock. And he just talked about, somebody asked him, did he ever go with cops on ride-alongs? He said he did. Says one time they got into this very chaotic chase of somebody who just robbed a liquor store. And he was in the back seat, and he says, the two guys in the front seat have guns, but I don't. What's wrong with this picture? And he quit after that. It was just, he decided not to.
The sightseeing wasn't as fun as it used to be.
I guess when you get older and stuff. But my favorite of the books is Ice.
Which, if we still have the version, we still have the original hardback, I think, at the main library. It has, like, one of the coolest, awesome, like, hard-boiled, like, book covers ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and they're coming out again. I was on Amazon, and they're republishing a bunch of them on February 28th, 2012, both e-books and regular paperbacks.
That's cool. And then have these ever been filmed?
Yes, several of them have. The two most noted in 73, I believe, I went to see it at the theater. It shows you how old I am. I saw Fuzz, and that was based on his book, and it starred Burt Reynolds, and Tom Skerritt, and they had good actors, but there was some miscasting. They had Yul Brynner as the deaf man, which was wrong, and Raquel Welch as Ellen McGray, the female detective, so it was kind of right. And at first, it was supposed to be directed by Brian De Palma, but...
That would have been amazing.
But so he fell out when they put Yul Brynner in. He said, Yul Brynner in a detective film, you know. But the best one... I even asked him about it that night, and he said it was far superior to his novel. The great Japanese director Akira Kurosawa adapted his book King's Ransom. It was turned into High and Low, and Criterion has put this out, and I highly recommend it. It's just a great movie.
Oh, yeah. That's
the best police procedural movie ever made.
Yeah, it's gone down in the film canon as, like, you know, one of the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome.
This doesn't sound like a series you need to read in any kind of order.
Even though I know people who have started at it, but I started with Ice, which, like I said, was my favorite. But I've just gone and picked, oh, that sounds interesting. Sadie, when she died, I just went with the titles and the description.
Is it like Law and Order where they have the same police, like, people, mm-hmm. and then you just go through different, each novel has a different case?
Right, uh-huh. Yeah, it's usually some urban paranoia, snipers, serial rapists, things of that. Lightning was the serial rapist, bombings, it's things of that nature. So, and you get to know the characters' personal lives, too.
I haven't left my house because of snipers in months. I'm Skyping in now.
And serial rapists.
Yeah. I think that's 10 plus 1. That's the novel that the sniper's about. But generally, urban paranoia is what he deals with.
Now I think that Evan Hunter was a sex addict. I don't know.
If you've read some of his other books, you go, yeah.
There you go. I don't know.
I haven't read any. I used to listen to him. Wrote another series under Ed McBain. It's about a lawyer. The Matthew Hope series. I remember listening to Cinderella.
And Salacious.
they're all named after fairy tales. And these ain't fairy tales. So I remember listening to it once, and it was a lot of kinky sex, and a woman asked, have you ever listened to this? And I said, I have, but I'm just going to warn you, I was kind of shocked at the kinkiness of it. And she said, oh, it's okay. And
she came That's back, what I was looking
she
for.
She came back in, put it on the counter, and just went, oh, you're right.
You guys shared a dark secret about Ed McBain.
But I did learn, doing research on this, he used to write porn books in the 60s. He denied it, but there's this rumor going around out there that he did, under another pseudonym.
Absolutely. You know, the book that he writes with his pseudonym and the first part that he writes under his real name is about a guy with a sex addict. Who is a sex addict? Do you know that he's a sex addict? There's too much there. Like he's letting everyone know. But so I was thinking about series fiction, right? And I thought, well, like, who are the masters of that? So it's comic books, right? So and actually, the last series that I finished that I really got into was Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, and those have come out in 6 volumes called The Saga of Swamp Thing. Alan Moore really took a character that was your typical sort of, you know, goop monster and really humanized him and turned him into a complex character who had this love interest, right? He's a scientist that gets turned into a monster, and there's kind of this Beauty and the Beast storyline. Then there's also this ecological storyline because he lives in the swamp, but the swamp in Louisiana is being polluted. There's also some scary stuff there, too, because it was Swamp Thing was a horror comic, so there's some genuinely scary ones. And, of course, you hear this name Alan Moore, you know, he wrote some other very, very famous comics. He wrote V for Vendetta, which is where Anonymous gets the Anonymous mask. So if you're talking about someone's, like, cultural influence, you know, the anarchist wearing Guy Fawkes mask was his idea in V for Vendetta, which was also originally published as a 10-part series, but you can get it from the library in one volume. I think, too, Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing really changed comics. Like, we've talked about Neil Gaiman a lot here in the podcast, and a lot of us are Neil Gaiman fans, and Neil Gaiman would have never been given a job writing comics if it wasn't for the success that Alan Moore had. But that isn't to take away from how good Swamp Thing is, his run on Swamp Thing. I don't think the library has all 6 volumes anymore. You might have to interlibrary loan a couple. I know for sure that we have volumes number 1 and 3 of the Saga of Swamp Thing. There is a really great scene when he can no longer, you know, have sex with his wife because he's this swamp monster, but he grows these tubers on his body, these, like, sort of, like, you know, swamp potatoes. she takes one off and eats it, and then they have, like, this, like, combined mind-meld LSD trip together. It's probably one of my favorite scenes in any comics ever. So that was my series pick. But the one thing that we haven't talked about is, like, Game of Thrones. And I haven't watched that show, but I know some of us have at least started to read that book. Or that series, the Song of Fire and Ice by George R.R. Martin.
Yeah, I've read like 3 books of the series so far.
And how's that?
I like it. It's more dragons and magic than I usually read, but I was compelled to read it by a friend who's pretty obsessed by it. And it's good. It's definitely the kind of series that you start at the beginning, and the story doesn't. There's not much of a break in the story between the first book and the next book. Like, the action just keeps going. So once you start. You know, you invest 1,000 pages in the first book, you feel sort of compelled to just keep going because you are 1,000 pages invested in these characters and you want to know what happens to them. But I also feel like George R.R. Martin maybe doesn't have any kind of end in sight. He's just going to keep, like, I'll be stuck reading this thing forever.
Well, I've read the first one, and I kind of didn't like all of the intrigue that was happening, and there were, like, some characters I didn't really care about in... So I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, I finished the first book. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to go on to the second one. And then I read the last chapter of the first book, and I was like, dang it, George R.R. Martin, now I have to keep going.
He knows how to make you want to keep going with it.
I haven't started the second one yet. I have. I just got it now to just start reading.
The first book was better than the second book, and then the third book is better than the second book also. So the second book is kind of a...
Sophomore slump.
Yeah, you've got to get through it to get to, you know, the politics and stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
It's definitely, he's not the world's great, like, he's really good at the plot and the character development, and each chapter is told from the point of view of a different character, and he does, like, the writing style changes a little bit. He's sort of a dragon and magic William Faulkner, maybe, I guess, which is being a little too kind to him, but because some of the, like, maybe it's just in the nature of, like, getting into the character, but there's some really bad writing in some of these, like, the Daenerys character, who's the queen, like, deposed queen who's the mother of dragons. Also, like, there's some, he talks about her having sex, and it's almost gross the way he does it.
It's the bad sex in books award,
I guess. There's some,
this is like a radar podcast at this point.
But he like refers to her vagina as her sex a few times, which is a really just a seems like a gross way to do that.
You need to read Ed McBain.
You can take some tips from Ed McBain. Oh, Lord. There's some smut going on in popular material.
And they're also, like, all these, and all the girls who are having sex in the book are all, like, 12 and 13 years old, which also makes it kind of creepy.
That's probably historically accurate.
I guess.
I mean, a little more than...
I imagine it's, like, medieval and stuff like that, but it still is kind of weird.
It's creepy.
So speaking, okay, now that we're, well, that we've gone there, like, who saw the girl with the dragon tattoo?
I saw the Swedish version.
And did you see the Swedish one too?
No, I did not. That was at a time in my life I weren't going to the movies that much.
So who has read the books?
I read the books.
You read the books?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you like them?
I liked them. It was a similar, like, it's not the style of book that I normally read, but I got into it. It was so popular, I felt like I maybe needed to delve into it. And it was my, like, guilty pleasure, trashy reading. But, it's like, totally plot-driven, and it hooks you in.
Yeah, I think
with
it pulls you
stuff.
In. It didn't, like, some people were like, oh my gosh, this is the best book ever. It didn't change my world. It didn't change my life. But it was a good read. I mean, it was worth the whatever pages that it took us to read it all three, but...
I thought the Swedish movie was solid, though. I remember thinking it was going to be, I'll just watch it. Kind of the quirk of the gothic main character. And then I just loved it. I thought it was one of the... It reminded me a lot of 70s, like, crime movies, where there's lots of development, as opposed to just, like, shaky camera angles.
That is
really good.
That is so bizarre, because... Like, my partner and I watched that movie, and we hated it.
Oh,
have you read the book?
Now, the two entries in the series after that, I hated. I thought they were awful.
So I didn't go after
but
that.
I was really surprised by the first one. I don't know.
We actually were like, and actually, too, I thought the plot was so absurd that I didn't want to read the books.
Oh.
So I know that there are a lot of people listening who love those movies and love those books. I still love you. I'm like the cactus. You only have to water it once a year. But After we saw the Swedish version, I was just like, oh, man, I just didn't want to read the book because I figured that because the plot was so weird, absurd. But we did just to see, like, what would, like, David Fincher, you know, and Daniel Craig sort of do with that material. Like, how's this going to go? And I like the American one better. I mean, it was stylish, but I just can't. For me, like, the plot, I can't get over the plot. Like, the plot is too. It was like whenever we read Rimdi by Neal Stephenson, there was, like, a layer of irony there. Like, when the, what is it, like, the Russian mafia kicks down the door to the Islamic terrorists when they're meeting to get the Chinese hackers. There's, like, that's, like, to me, was what The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo was like, because there's Nazis, and there's torture, and there's incest, and there's evil corporations, right? And there's the sexy goth chick who's a computer hacker, right? But there wasn't any irony there. It was supposed to be really serious and intense, and I was.
So do you think maybe 10 years from now it'll be like watching Hackers? You know, you'll be like, oh god, this is so dated. Oh god, what is she doing?
I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure.
Hackers was dated from the moment.
Of inception.
Yeah. I'm not sure. So, Bill, I wonder what you thought about the American version of the movie.
Well, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect going in. And just to tell you the truth, I tend to like movies like that. Mysteries. And let me tell you when I went to see it. I went to the Opry Mills. This is a more better story. And I go up to them, there's this woman working there, it's a matinee, and I said, one to the girl with the dragon tattoo, and she looked at me and she said, are you 18? And I said, I said, well, do you want to see my ID? And she said it's rated R, and I said, well, that's just how I like them. And you should have seen her face. It was like, whoa, you know? And the thing about it, I liked it because it was a adult hard R mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And, you know, and along talking another series, I was in love with Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that movie a lot. So it was just sort of like, if I was recommending movies, those would be the two I would recommend the most, just because I love that genre and stuff.
The review said Gary Oldman was just, like, phenomenal in that
movie. Oh, yeah,
movie,
he was great. He was great.
I hadn't got to it yet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
he doesn't do anything as much as he used to.
I had seen Alec Guinness, and when I first heard about that, I thought, well, nobody's going to top Alec Guinness, but he does, and he's just better. And I enjoyed it a lot more, too, than the miniseries.
Yeah. And Alec Guinness was in the miniseries?
Yes, he was George Smiley in the miniseries.
What year was that come out? Do you remember?
Oh, man. I was in college. That was 80s.
Okay.
I think that's early, you know, Guinness.
And is that out on DVD?
Yeah, we've got it.
Yeah, we've got it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That was one of the first box sets we got, was that.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I guess we kind of jumped a little bit there. So the Game of Thrones TV show that's on HBO is based on the Song of Fire and Ice series by George R.R. Martin. Mm-hmm. And The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, if anyone's listening that doesn't know, is based on what has come to be called the Millennium Trilogy by Stieg Larsson. And then Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy is based on the series of spy novels by John le Carré.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just to catch everybody up to speed.
Yeah. So, and then what else? I guess I was going to mention Hunger Games.
Oh yeah, because it comes out too. Then,
yeah.
Which our manager tried to give me today. She was like, "Take it off my hands," and I was like, "No," because I just can't do it. I can't commit.
I read the first one. Really enjoyed it. I bought the second one. I just haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
It's totally, I mean, for those of you that don't have any idea what we're talking about, The Hunger Games is totally not what you'd think it would be. It's a YA book, but it's kind of like, for those of you who saw The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's kind of like that, but with teens. And so, I mean, it's kind of, the concept is kind of, if you really stop and think about it, it's a little bit absurd, but it also takes place in the future, so you just kind of write it off and enjoy the plot. And I thought the first one was really good. The second two, I think they were necessary, but they were kind of like the second two of The Matrix that it didn't really.
Yeah, I ended the third book not totally.
Yeah.
Sure of what happened.
Yeah.
It was a little convoluted and confusing.
Future Games part of it just reminded me of, like you said, The Running Man and like Death Race 2000, and I was like, it sounded like kind of a children's rehash of that.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. I mean,
yeah, it's
not. You're not. benefiting yourself in any way by reading it other than just having fun. It's a nice diversion.
To know what everybody's talking about.
Yeah. My mom's boyfriend worked on the crew on the Hunger Games movie.
Wow.
He's got a really awesome crew t-shirt. It says Capital City Electrician or something like that.
That's cool.
Who's excited to see the movie?
I am. You know, once again, I like that stuff. It also reminds of me, when I was reading, I was thinking it more. One of my favorite short stories is Richard Connell's The Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah.
And I've always liked that theme of manhunting.
Being hunted.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I don't know why, but it just it's an intriguing theme.
I mean, since we're...
You're really exposing some interesting aspects of your personality today. Manhunting man.
I was the one that said that I knew that Evan Hunter was a sex addict.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Just to claim that,
yeah,
just so you're clear.
Yeah, so you're clear.
And wasn't Shane great?
Just so I haven't seen that yet.
But you love Michael Fassbender.
My partner wanted to go see The Innkeepers last weekend, so we went to go see The Innkeepers. So
what
I said, okay, that's next week. But just, I guess one of the, since we're throwing out recommendations, that sort of the plot of The Hunger Games has been seems like it's been dealt with before in fiction. And I guess my recommendation would be The Maze of Death by Philip K. Dick, kind of deals with the same thing. But I guess the thing that kind of came up too, and this has been my experience with serious fiction, is that the first one is always so good, right? And then after that, it's kind of like, blah. I talked about one of the reasons that I talked about comics, because the last actual series that I finished was His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman. And the first one was so good, right? And then the next two were just, blah. I didn't get it. And then I can remember, too, a friend of mine started the Dune series on audio. Mm-hmm. BBC did this awesome production with this full cast, the same actors the whole way through. Scott Brick as Paul Atreides, and he listened to the first one. He's like, "That's awesome. I'm going to go to the second one." I'm like, "Dude, just forget it. Like, no. Like, you're just wasting your time. Just, you know, just go home and sandpaper your knuckles off. It does not worth it." So, like, sure enough, he forced his way through it, and then he just quit. He was like, there's no point.
It's killed my love.
I think it depends on when the author starts, if they have some idea in mind of a series as a whole encapsulated thing, or if they're just like, I wrote this book, and now I'm going to make more money by writing another one. Or the Game of Thrones, or the Song of Ice and Fire, like, the second one was a slump, but it was still an enjoyable read. And the third one picked up, and, you know, it's not like it was, I will read the fourth one eventually. I have to, like, read other books in between them so I don't just burn out on that story all the way through.
I couldn't go through back-to-back either, I don't think.
But I guess now that I brought up that some of the series that Amanda and Bill, you guys have talked about, like 84th Precinct and...
87th.
How could I get it wrong?
So close.
After the Randy Jackson thing and then that, man, I'm going to retire from this podcast. And then the J.D. Robb in-depth series and the Janet Ivanovich Stephanie Plum series, I mean, you could jump right into those and it'd still be like a self-contained story. You wouldn't be... Would you be lost?
The Ivanovich, you'd probably be lost because it does kind of build the references forward and back. The J.D. Robb, you'd probably be okay.
I dig it.
I did want to mention, too, there's a website for those of you that like to track your series called FictFact, FictFact. And you can just type in the author's name, and then it'll give you a listing of all the books in the series. So if you want to do something like the J.D. Robb that has a ton of books in it, it'll list them all for you, and so you don't have to keep looking them up every time. You can just log in, mark, check off, I read that one, this is where I'm going next. And it also has some social aspect, but I don't use it for that. I just sit in my little closet
just
by myself.
Facts.
And yeah, I just want my series. Thank you. So it's kind of fun.
And then speaking of series that don't seem to have an ending, next week we'll talk about Haruki Murakami's Murakami. Next month we will talk about Haruki Murakami's 1Q84. So that'll be me, Amanda.
I'm in. So I'm doing the first book, but I've got a month to get through the second.
Yeah, so Lisa and maybe special guest Liz will be here.
She loved it.
Yeah, so... Talk about that. That should be fun. So if you,
do you think I can get it read in the next 3 weeks?
I have the audiobook on my desk.
No. We all
just
have,
saying it's only 40 hours, I think. Yeah.
See?
We all have the...
I can't do audiobooks.
Well, I mean, if you can get a hold of a print, I mean, I think it is like 1,500 pages.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's 900. It's right at 1,000, and I've been reading it for 3.5 weeks, and I've got like 200 pages left.
You can do it.
I'm almost there. Bill, you want to read it? You really just want to leave that out.
You would like his earlier books, for sure. Like Hard-Boiled Wonderland and The End of the World. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one way. You would like that book.
Well, maybe that would be a good primer.
It's shorter, mm-hmm. too.
Or you could do mm-hmm. point by counterpoint. You know,
at some point, this is so funny about Murakami, right? His work used to have, it would build this tension, there'd be these fantasy elements, and then the plot would be resolved. And when he did that, he was a science fiction author. But then he started writing these books where the tension wasn't resolved, things weren't explained, things were just left open, and then he became a literary author.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In the eyes of critics. So
this is magical realism, not sci-fi.
Yeah, I know. It's a wonderful change, you know.
But he started writing at a period when that sort of thing wasn't accepted as literary fiction, and now science fiction and fantasy elements are more accepted.
And we have to stop talking now because that's going to be part of the discussion next month.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so with, I'll probably bring that up. I think it'd be interesting. Here he's definitely... Well, never mind. I'm censoring you, so I have to censor myself.
Good.
Fair.
I guess that's
the
end.
Where's the theme music when you need
no.
it?
No tickle my fancy.
I think we're out
it's
of time.
Okay. I'll save it for next month.
Hey, for more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Org?
ORG.
ORG. Thank you.